Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, TSA extends the face mask update mandate into September. The real ID deadline is pushed back, and the cruise industry finally sees the light at the end of the pier.
At 3:20, our Smarter Travelers segment features an interview with Charlie Leoka from Travelers United. Charlie addresses rights for flyers, and we wonder together why passengers in Europe have better protection than flyers in the U.S.
Reporter Clayton Whitehead stops by to follow up on a topic we introduced last week, dark tourism. It doesn't mean what you think it does, or does it? Probably should have saved this one for Halloween. Clayton talks dark tourism attractions at 3:35.
And at 3:50, Mark has the story about the Alaska state legislator who got banned from Alaskan Airlines flights. Only problem is, it's the only airline that flies between her home in Anchorage and the capital of Juneau.
We also talk about the wheelchairs and airport story from a different angle and tell you why Broadway's return in the fall may look a little different than it did before.
Keeping you informed and making you a smarter traveler for the journey, we are the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets for paradise.
Up to Alaska, I go north to Russia's own.
All I want and man.
I come from a land on the land.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Welcome, 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 everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Thanks so much for joining us again today. Next weekend, Sunday, we'll have a special Mother's Day show. Be thinking about it now. Stories about trips of time on the road, trips on the road with Mom, huh, Mark?
Yeah. The time when you were six and you were on the road with Mom and you did something terrible, she locked you in the hotel closet and didn't let you out for a day and a half. Not that story. We won't want to tell that.
That was your story. Mine was being left behind at a bus stop because I wouldn't stop playing the pinball machine. I think it was either Bakersfield or Fresno. You found me about a week later. I was still there.
And you lived in Modesto at the time?
Yes. We took the bus to Southern California to see my mom's folks and and would stop. And whenever, of course, you know, how many times the bus stops between Modesto and Southern California.
Right.
Oh, my. Anyway, we'll look forward to that. I'll share that with everybody a week from now.
You're an old pinball guy, huh?
I was, you know, yeah. I mean, kids at, you know, either at the bowling alley or the roller rink or better yet, man, I mean, at the bus stop.
I tried Pac-Man and all of the new stuff when it came along, and all it did was give me carpal tunnel, you know. And so pinball is if you ever get to Seattle, it's not open right now, unfortunately, but hopefully it will come back after COVID is all over. But there is a pinball museum in downtown Seattle.
I would love to go to that.
And it doesn't have, like, you know, games to look at. It's a pinball museum where you play the pinball machines, yeah.
Right. On Fremont Street in Vegas, I think it might be upstairs in a casino or whatever, but they feature a lot of classic old pinball machines.
Oh, really?
In that building, too. It's nothing compared to this place in Seattle, from what I understand. Any rate, folks, we are the Travel Guys, and at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And nowadays, that's a lot of stuff every week. Mark, what you got for us this time around?
Well, let's see. Every week we have an update on the cruise industry. One week they're hopeful. The next week they're mad as hell. This week we're back to hopeful again. The CDC has said it's committed to the U.S. cruise industry resuming operations by midsummer. This has made the cruise industry people who hated the CDC last week really happy with the CDC this week. Thrilled is the word that one of the cruise line executives used. So needless to say, what they're saying to them now is that you can be If your crew is 98% vaccinated and your customers are 95% vaccinated, then you can sail without these warm-up cruises. So that's what the cruise industry is looking at. They don't want to have to spend a couple of months making believe that they are cruising when they feel like that all they would be doing is showing that they can do what they believe they can do. So it's like, if we can do this, then why can we not get back in the water? 95%, 98%, I don't know. I'm nervous if one person out of 20 doesn't have a vaccination. So
thank you very much. That was my thought, too. I mean, you know, the vaccine has a number, 95%, effective. And so you're dealing with that to begin with. And then you're talking about 95% of the crew. Which one is it? 95% of the crew needs to be vaccinated?
95% of the passengers.
Of the passengers. Well, what about that other 5%?
Uh-huh.
I just feel that I would be somewhere running into that 1.5%, or the same thing with the staff. I mean,
you're on a cruise ship, you go into a dining room in the evening. The dining room is full. I mean, the tables are spaced a little bit, but you're still going to be fairly close to quite a few people, and you're going to be in there for a while. And even if you wore masks going in, you know, nobody's going to suck their food in through the mask. So this is all needs to be worked out. I hope that they can figure it out. One of the other problems that the cruise lines are now reporting is that they're having problems finding crew because it's been so long since they sailed. Well, the crew has dissipated. Many of the crew are from foreign countries. So they've got to get hired back on and get cleared to go into the countries where the cruise ship is going. The cruise lines are also still barking about, you know, going out of ports of other countries and stuff like that, which is possible. But by flagging themselves in foreign ports and operating in the United States, they've really got quite a pretty good situation. So I can't see them. I think that's a lot of bluster. And I think the cruise lines will be back in the water in the next 2 or 3 months. So if I were you, I wouldn't plan for a cruise before September, but I think by then we'll be okay. Of course, September would be the height of the hurricane season, so good luck with all of that.
Well, there's other places to cruise that don't have hurricanes.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yes. But the cruise industry will probably have a dozen ships docked down there in Miami, just waiting for the storms to come in. Anyways, TSA has extended the face mask mandate in all public transportation, in train and air and airports, train stations, and the like. You have to wear a mask. All forms of public transportation, that goes until September the 3rd. It was set to expire later this month. And the real ID deadline. Remember we used to talk a lot about this?
Right, yeah. It was supposed to have been originally... Was it either October of this year or October last year was the first deadline?
Yeah, it was originally established in 2005.
Oh, yeah, okay. If you want to go way back, yeah, all right.
Yeah, so following the 9/11 attacks, and so the idea was to get everybody with the same ID, something that was compliant that everybody would know because every state's ID card is different. And so now that deadline, which had been pushed back many times, was set to expire this year. Now it's been bumped all the way out to May the 3rd of 2023. So now you have a year and a half. So if you are getting a driver's license renewed in the next year and a half, make sure that you get a real ID. And expect us to talk more about this later on.
There you go. Yeah, and I remember it was 2019. I was doing ads for the Department of Transportation, you know, encouraging people to go in, and now's the time to do it, yada yada. I rushed out. I got mine. My wife got hers, and we've been sitting on these real IDs with nothing to use them for, really, other than to wait for the time when they're mandatory. But I'm okay with that.
But I'm okay with that. Car rentals. If you are, we've talked about this a couple times before. This is getting worse before it gets better. People are mad at the car rental companies. Here's the deal. In business, when you have a product that a whole lot of people want and there's not much product, you raise the price. It's called supply and demand. It's the oldest principle regarding business since Jesus or before.
Before.
So the car rental companies don't have very many cars. and there's a greater demand for them than there was before. The car rental companies have been hurting for a long time. So now their day is in the sun, and now they're getting a better price for what cars they have. And it's going to be a while before they have more cars because of the computer chip shortage. So if you are thinking about going out and you're going someplace where you're going to need a car rental, you're going to have to arrange it early. You're going to have to do a little shopping. I'm not suggesting you dip down into the second tier companies now, but among the top tier companies, which are basically all owned by one of two outfits, you might want to shop around a little bit. People are reporting that they're getting to places to pick up a car and having to wait hours for there to be a car, or get there and they had rented a full-size car and all there is a compact unless you want to wait until morning. So they're cutting it so close that in many cases it's not working out. So the people who are first getting served in those situations are the people with the frequent renter cards and the people who are high up the ladder at Hertz or whatever company it is that you're working with. So you've got to consider the possibility of joining one of those frequent renter programs. Even if you have never rented with the company before, it at least shows them that you've bought into whatever their program is. Disneyland is welcoming back guests after more than a year. I'm sure that you've seen that. And if you go to TravelGuysRadio.com, you will see a story there that was written by Rich Tomaselli. Rich writes for Travel Pulse. He's a really good writer, and I hope to have him on the show one day. He wrote some things about Walt Disney and what Disney's values were, his personal values. He was a rather conservative man. The values of Disney World today and kind of how they all mesh together. And it's a really, really an interesting article. You can find a link to it at TravelGuysRadio.com. Olympic officials in Japan are determined to have a Tokyo Olympic Games despite Japan's growing doubts. Japan is the host country. So this is going to be interesting. We are now roughly 60 days away from what should be the Olympics. And Japan is saying we're not so sure. And the Olympic people are saying, yeah, we are pretty sure. So we'll see what happens. We'll keep an eye on it. Would you be more likely to go on a cruise or a tour that requires vaccinations? Yes, they would feel safer, says 62%. 23% says they're going to wait a while to travel. 12% says the vaccination wouldn't make any difference. That's a survey from Travelers United. And Charlie Leocha from Travelers United is coming up next with us right here on the Travel Guys, and that is your travel news for today.
All right, my friends, thanks for joining us. Keep it here as we continue with stuff to make you a smarter traveler. Charlie joins us right after the break. All the leaves are brown. Hello again, my friends. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And it's time to bring on one of our favorite guests that helps make you a smarter traveler on a regular basis. Mark, please reintroduce our buddy to our audience for us today.
Joining us from Travelers United, the chairman of Travelers United, is Charlie Leocha. Thank you for your time today. You're always very generous with us. Couple of topics that Travelers United, who, by the way, folks, are the people that stand up for people like you and I in Washington, D.C., and make sure that the airlines, who have a very powerful lobby in Washington, do not just run roughshod over passengers on a regular basis. Charlie's organization has been responsible for some pretty cool things that have been, might seem like small things to you, but have been significant changes in the way airline tickets are marketed and sold and the like. They have a website, and if you go to TravelGuysRadio.com, you'll find a link there to all that they do. It's a membership organization. The membership fees are very, very minimal, and they send out weekly newsletters. If you're an avid traveler, I would strongly suggest it's something that you could support. Charlie, you have talked about a couple of topics here that struck me as important. One was about posting, the idea of posting basic passenger rights in an airport so that people who are doing business in an airport would know what their rights were if the airline tried to bump them off a flight. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. And these rights are already the rights of citizens anywhere else in the world except in the United States. And so we deal with these regularly, but the airlines here are very powerful. And so what we're looking at is, originally, I was looking at putting up a series of posters at airports and having the posters tell people what their rights are. And they've done this in Europe, and the airports put the rights up, and it is all done on a voluntary basis. They're giving the posters for free. The posters then go up. And at the beginning, the posters used to show up in strange places on the back of round columns, next to the bathrooms. And then the Europeans started to learn that having an informed consumer actually saved the airlines money and saved everybody time. And so they started to put them in right where you could actually use them. They would have the information about delayed and lost and damaged baggage put right above the baggage carousel when baggage is being returned. They would have information about denied boarding compensation right at the jetway so that you would then know what your rights are as a passenger. And this is what we're trying to do here in the United States. And I've now been trying to do this for the last at least 12 years. And so far, no luck. Nobody wants to do it. I've even come up with ways that we can get all of the posters printed for free, but no, they don't want to do it. So we're still pushing to get this thing done. It would be very, very good.
Now, Charlie, is it the airport that doesn't want to do it, or is it the airlines? What do you think is the bottom line behind the reason the posters are not going up?
Well, the bottom line is that I don't think that the airlines want to do it, and the airports do not consider a passenger as their customer. They consider the airline as their customer. And this is a big change. And I've spoken at airline organizations, and I've spoken at airport organizations, and I've told them that, look, the real customer is the person that you're moving. It's not the airline that you're bringing in and out of the airport and so on. However, they still haven't gotten that message, and they still look at the airline as their customer, and they're going to keep the airlines happy, even if it means that the customers are unhappy.
Well, here again, you know, the airline pays for the space for the plane to come, and, you know, it's a source of income for the airport. Where the people that are coming aren't, you know, directly seen that way.
And if we didn't spend $7 for a hot dog and $6 for a cup of coffee in the airport, why the airport's revenues would be considerably. I mean, let's not forget the fact that the airport's not considering us to be their customers is ridiculous.
I agree.
Because we go there, we pay parking fees, we pay taxes to the airlines, which some are going to make their way back to that airport. The airline pays landing fees, which are built into the cost of our ticket. The interesting thing, though, is why would the European airlines be okay with that, whereas the U.S. airlines would not?
Good question.
Any insight into that, Charlie?
Well, the insight there is that the Europeans have a very strong central organization that deals with consumer protections. And therefore, they've said that consumers need to be protected and consumers should have some benefits. So these are we've got a DOT, which is basically under the thumb of the airlines. We're also looking at trying to get our basic customer protections and consumer protections on the ticket jacket. It used to be that every time you got a ticket, you'd flip it over and it talked about the Warsaw Convention and how much money you would get from your luggage is lost and so on. You don't find that anymore. And all we would need is DOT needs to say that every single boarding pass printed at home, all of the itineraries need to have basically your basic information on it for denied boarding, if you're bumped off of a flight, for lost luggage, and they should also include the foreign delay rules. And that's what we need to know as consumers. It should be printed on everybody's ticket, but we still haven't managed to get that done once again because the airlines don't like it.
And interesting, there are lots and lots of businesses that are government controlled that do have to print their disclaimers and whatever their stuff on the label of your food and so forth. But Here again, as you pointed out, Charlie, the airline and the Department of Transportation, I mean, the airlines clearly is in control and has snuffed any of that possibility to helping out the consumer, just not happening. And we got to rely on you, Charlie. What's being done? What are we doing?
Well, during the Trump administration, we started out with basically the administration said nothing's going to happen, and they kept their word. The previous administration, during Obama's administration, they said, we love you. We're going to do everything we can to help you out. And then after the first 6 months, when we got the Passenger Protection 2, Passenger Protection 1, Passenger Protection 2, and Passenger Protection 3 passed during the first 2 years of the Obama administration, then nothing happened. Now we've got a new world. We've got Secretary Pete coming in. He now says that he's interested in people. We still have not met with him as consumers. We're trying to do that. And I'm really hoping that we get our meeting with him very, very soon.
Yeah, and perhaps they'll take a look at it from a consumer point of view instead of so much emphasis on looking at it from a business point of view. The airlines have a tremendous amount of power over consumers, but consumers have power they don't realize when it comes to airlines, and the airlines don't want you to find out what that power is. Our guest has been Charlie Leoka. He is the chairman of Travelers United. I remind you that they are advocates for you, the traveler, and you can find a link to their website at travelguysradio.com and perhaps an opportunity for you to join in the fight. They do some really good things with a really small budget. So if you're an avid traveler, it's someplace you could put a few dollars. Thank you, Charlie, for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Okay, I really appreciate you having me on, and I'm looking forward to talking with everybody again.
Charlie's always informative, always on the spot. And as I mentioned, Charlie, we're counting on you to be our advocate there in Washington, D.C. One of the things that Mark, you and all the other tour companies and tour directors and people in travel try to do their best to do to protect us from the big guys.
Yeah, well, Charlie's kind of a bulldog. He doesn't go away easily. So he doesn't win. He fights battles for years and years and years before he wins. So his wins don't come often, but when they do, they're generally good news for consumers. So it's good to have somebody at least keeping track of things and in there battling with us all the time.
There you go. And that takes a lot of patience and tenacity. All right, coming up, dark tourism. What do you think it is? Yeah? Well, we're going to explain. Clayton Whitehead, road reporter for Sports Leisure Vacations, joins us, and we're going to talk about dark tourism next right here on The Travel Guys.
737 coming out of the sky. Oh, won't you take me down to Memphis on a midnight ride? I won't move.
Hey, hey, it's Tom and Mark. It's The Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget now links to what we talk about and lots of good stuff to make you a smarter traveler at travelguysradio.com. Mark, we got Clayton, our road reporter, back with us. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, we alluded to this a little bit in a previous program. Clayton came up with this article that says dark tourism on the rise. And so when he sent it to me, I was like, well, that sounds kind of interesting. I wasn't exactly sure what dark tourism was, but once it was explained, dark tourism is something that people have quite an interest in, and I thought maybe we could touch on a few of those places and what they mean. Clayton?
Well, let's tell people what it's not, first of all. We're not talking about stargazing here. We're not talking about walking around in the dark or bumping into trees or bears.
Okay.
But we're talking about things that are, I guess we'll say, a little bit on the emotionally dark side, the macabre, places where very bad historical things happened.
Yeah.
And this as kind of a category of tourism is on the rise in these pandemic days. Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Why do you think that is?
Well, I guess there are a lot of reasons, but I think perhaps not the least of which is that people have just had a lot more time on their hands to play around on the internet. And you know how you can fall into a hole, you know, like on YouTube, mm-hmm. where you just look at one little thing and then you look at one other little related thing. And then all of a sudden you spent 5 or 6 hours and you've really gone deep into that whatever category, right? So I guess there's like two different areas of dark tourism. One is kind of the macabre, and I'll put one of our own beloved attractions in that category, going over to Alcatraz. You know, I don't think any of us want to live there, despite the nice view. But there's a real attraction there to see where Al Capone was held and to see where these vicious criminals were held in this terrible, you know, in these terrible living conditions.
Plus, you couldn't escape.
And you couldn't escape, right? So that's one sort of thing. And then, of course, as a native Southerner, I think another big category of dark tourism would be like visiting the Civil War battlefields. Now, I'll confess, as a Southerner and talking about an event that happened well over 150 years ago, there's a certain amount of romanticism that comes in it now. I mean, when I visit Antietam, where the single bloodiest day of the Civil War happened, I don't see blood today or bones or corpses, right? I see beautiful meadows and statues. But then there's this yet another very, very dark category, which would be like visiting Auschwitz. Concentration camps in Europe where
right.
The pretty green grass has not grown and never will. They are intentionally kept stark and truthful and are quite disturbing even to this day. These are important attractions, no matter how you slice them or dice them, whether they're just interesting and macabre or whether it is an important historical site. There's a lot to be gained from visiting these sorts of sites, but I think it takes some preparation, maybe not so much Alcatraz, but certainly going to some place like Auschwitz. I mean, or someplace closer to home. Let's say one of the Holocaust museums. There's an excellent and a very large, extraordinary Holocaust museum down in the Los Angeles area, and of course on the National Mall in Washington D.C. is our National Holocaust Museum. You know, the consumer just has to know that they're about to get into something that may affect them for a day or two or three. They probably won't feel like, you know, going to the Dairy Queen afterwards and getting a Slurpee.
People going to Auschwitz approach it with a much different manner than people going to Disneyland. You mentioned another category of this dark tourism around the country has been former prisons and reformatories. And there's one in the Missouri State Penitentiary in Jefferson City where they give tours, the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield. You mentioned here in Northern California that just down in Ione, mm-hmm. there's the Preston School where young men were kept for quite some time. And didn't you mention that you had toured there or visited there?
Yes, you can. Again, this is pre-COVID and hopefully post-COVID. You can tour the facility. Now, it's not open daily as an attraction, but they're just open on certain dates. You can check the website. But one of the interesting things about Ione and some of these others that you've mentioned are overnight programs they're doing now. And as you might imagine, places like this will have a reputation for being haunted.
Haunted.
And these overnight programs, I think, can be fun and or let's say illuminating.
Mm-hmm. Haunted.
Yeah. That's haunted. The one in yes. Ione there. It's just driving by it and seeing it on the side of the hill.
Don't you? I agree with you.
It's amazing. Just, you know, I'm very, very curious. I have to go check that out.
The place, if you drove by that place at 11 o'clock on Halloween night, I mean, I don't know that I could do that. It feels like a place that maybe some good things didn't happen there, and there might be some stories still left to be told. Clayton, we have to wrap this up. Is there anything that we haven't talked about here?
Well, I would just encourage people not to poo-poo an experience because it may not be the happiest thing on earth. There's history to learn, and also every time you go through the turnstile and pay a ticket, you're putting some money towards the preservation of that site. And that's important.
Yeah. Next time that you go to a Titanic attraction somewhere, you can be king of the world or something. Clayton Whitehead, we're talking about dark tourism and some of the places around the country and indeed around the world that support tourism that's a little bit different than going to the happiest places on earth. Clayton, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Mark and Tom. See you next time.
Well, okay, Mark, I have to ask. Oh, by the way, if you're just joining us, it's Mark and Tom, the Travel Guys. What's the darkest for you, darkest travel location? I know you've done some ghost ghost tours.
Well, the ghost things are not. Maybe it's because I have a positive outlook when it goes to ghosts, but I think the ghosts like me. So ghost things are not a big issue for me. They don't scare me. But I will tell you, going to Auschwitz was one of the hardest to define moments of my life. Getting there, and just there is a feeling that prevails there. That is just you have to go. And people who have been to places like that have taken them in that way, certainly understand exactly what I'm talking about. But you know, it's one thing to go to a place that is, you know, known for something that happened there, but something that happened to a whole lot of people over a long period of time. You know, I don't know. It's
it'd be hard to be much darker than that. That's for sure.
Yeah,
that was a fascinating story.
I thought so.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. We're gonna be talking.
I got a whole pile of odds and ends here. Really cool odds and ends.
This is the official odds and ends segment of the show today, my friends, coming up after the break. Don't forget now, you can find links to our special guests like Charlie with you, Travelers United, and some of the stuff that we talk about at TravelGuysRadio.com. So stick around. We'll be back here on the Travel Guys. Hey there, it's Mark and Tom, Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. We were talking dark travel before we took a break. I want to remind you, if you go to TravelGuysRadio.com, Mark and our web gal put together a list of some really cool dark travel locations for you to poke around at. I think you'll enjoy it. And also at the top of the hour, when we started the program, Mark, you teased about a... what was she? She's a senator?
Alaska. She's a state senator in Alaska.
State senator for Alaska who, for whatever the reason, has been banned from flying with Alaska Airlines. What's the story, dude?
She's been after Alaska Airlines for several months. There are a couple of videos of her online, including one of this most recent incident that someone else filmed of her haranguing Alaska Airlines and then airport security in Anchorage over their mask provision and taking everybody's name and all this stuff. Of course, this isn't a rule.
Haranguing.
Yes.
It's a technical term?
It is. It is.
Okay.
This is not a new rule, of course. It's not something that was sprung on her when she got to the airport. She knew exactly what she was getting into, and I'm going to suggest this lady was looking for a battle everywhere she went. And so she got it. Alaska, she was rude enough to Alaska Airlines this time. They let her on the plane and then let her know that, you know, you're not getting on our planes anymore. The only problem is she represents a suburban area just north of Anchorage. And so the only airline that flies from Anchorage to Juneau is Alaska Airlines, which she now cannot fly. So the only way to get there is a 14-hour ferry and driving trip that goes through Canada, which how she got through Canada, I have no idea. But so I'm just going to suggest you, right, wrong, or otherwise, this lady didn't think about this very well. I mean, if you're going to take a stand someplace where you've at least got a fallback plan B. Now, apparently, this ban is good for 30 days. Then Alaska Airlines says they will review it. I suppose they'll probably cave in and let her back on the airplane. But if they do, they should get some kind of, you know, signed promise from her that she will behave herself. And if the funny thing is, if you go and you read the comments online, I went down the rabbit hole. I read about 200 of them. And some of the people that she represents are not very happy with her. Even people who support her political opinions are not very happy with her. So anyways, just kind of interesting. That story's been around all week. Some people have probably already heard it, but we'll give you an update. Find out if Laura Reinbold is able to get back on Alaska Airlines or if she just has to paddle her way down to Juneau.
She'll be working from home.
Quote of the week: with vaccinations accelerating and travel interest rebounding sharply, it's more likely that President Biden will dunk a basketball on live TV then airlines will reimpose middle seat blocking.
Okay.
I thought that was a founder of Scott's Cheap Flights, an online travel agency, said he thinks it's more likely the president will dunk a basketball on live TV than airlines will go about leaving that middle
blocking
seat.
Blocking middle seats, yeah.
Yeah, that's from Japan comes this word. You know, we're in the middle of a pandemic and nobody wants to touch anything or anybody or anything. So an airline in Japan has come up with a lavatory. This is pretty cool. A hands-free lavatory door. So all you have to do is like wave your hand and the door opens. And once you get inside, you can lock and unlock the door with a sliding button that activates the lights. You don't have to touch anything else. And there's a handle that you can use so you can use your elbow to pop open the door from the inside. You know how you have that dilemma when you're in – anytime you're in a restroom.
Right.
And it's an individual restroom and you're done washing your hands and stuff. Now you've got to open the door. So some people, you know, they take the towel that they dried their hands with and open the door. So these guys have thought of everything. These airline people are trying to keep you from having to touch anything. So now you can hit something with your elbow and open
the door. It's interesting. If it's hands-free, you don't want the person walking up and waving their hand and opening the door while you're in there. So it sounds to me like they do have a lock on the inside to prevent that. You know, I would have been liked to have been part of that creative process to figure that one out.
I bet your wife must love how your mind works.
You know, she's very, very creative. I put her on a task today. You know, if you watch much TV and you see all the different commercials for different ways that people can come up with making a sandwich or a burger, can you imagine the job of being the creative service, the people that design what the next burger is going to look like at Carl's Jr.? I mean, that could be an interesting job.
I was up half the night last night thinking about that.
Yes. Well, you have a great job, you and Clayton and all the folks there at Sports Leisure, and that's designing and coming up with ways to help people travel. So
you want to hear something really crazy?
That's got to be fun.
Last week, we announced our Christmas mystery tours. Three or four times a year, we do trips where folks sign up. They don't know where they're going. And in some cases, the trips can cost a couple thousand dollars. And every year we do one pre-Christmas that goes to an area that has a wonderful Christmas celebration. Sometimes it's a small town. Sometimes it's a big city. So last year we couldn't go. So this year we're having two. And so there's 60 available seats. And on Friday morning at 9 o'clock, people could start signing up for them. By the close of business Friday, actually by about an hour after that, one trip of 30 was already completely sold out, and the other one has only 13 seats available on it. Keeping in mind we're in the middle of a pandemic, these people have no idea where they're going. I mean, other than one did say it was in California, and one is outside of California. But anyway, that's the Sports Leisure.
I would guess that the majority of them are frequent travelers with Sports Leisure. And if they're not, they're ones that know people who are. They have that kind of confidence in you and your company to provide them quality entertainment. And heck, it's December. I mean, I think if we're going to be positive about where we can go and being able to do pretty much anything when we get there, I would say December ought to be a pretty good bet.
Which is what we thought at this time last year, that December would be a pretty good bet.
Really?
Yeah.
That
was the way that we looked at it. Listen, we also mentioned at the top of the show that Broadway may be a little bit different when it comes back. They're talking about coming back in September, and the mayor of New York says he's opening the city on July the 15th. So it looks like the September thing for Broadway might be on track. There's going to be less demand for Broadway when it comes back because, you know, people aren't going to show up on the first night to fill every theater or the theaters that are open. So what some of the people are thinking is, and this has been discussed before for a long time on Broadway, most shows do 8 shows a week. They have one night when they're dark, and they do 2 shows on Sunday and 2 on Wednesdays. And some do 2 on Saturdays and 2 on Wednesdays. So 8 shows a week and one day off, which is a really difficult schedule. I mean, I don't care what part you have in the show. That's a difficult schedule week after week after week. Well, some of those nights are throwaway nights. It's really hard to make money unless you have a hit show that's brand new. So what they're saying is maybe when we come back, we don't come back with eight shows a week. Maybe we come back, maybe you come back Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and maybe I come back Monday, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And yeah. So maybe we try to fit the demand and the supply up a little better so that shows don't go under and people still have jobs and we don't have half full theaters, which frankly, why did it take them so long to think of this? But it's such a competitive environment. And so it's entirely possible that you could go to New York and not have 30 theater choices on a Thursday night. You might only have 25.
The question's going to be, and those that run these theaters would know the answers, and that is, do you have to have a full house to make a buck? Does it take 50% of a crowd? And as you mentioned, some nights are busier than others. But here again, if you cut back the number of nights, you go 50%, you could probably meet the demand. But here again, what's it cost to put on a Broadway show?
You close
show?
Down a few of those 50% houses, and those people who are 50%, most of them are going to go to another house. Mm-hmm. So now all the houses around them that were 50% are now 55% or 58%. Most Broadway people will tell you that the break-even make-money range is somewhere in the 72 to 80% capacity. So mm-hmm. which airlines would tell you, I think, about the same thing, about 75 to 80% capacity is what they need. Speaking of airlines here, as we've got a couple more miscellaneous things to get to before 4 o'clock, American Airlines sent me a thing the other day saying 50% more miles when you buy miles. And it reminded me to tell people again, never, ever, 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 ever buy miles. Unless
I get those every week from Southwest.
Unless you are 1,000 miles short of your 110,000-mile first class Europe ticket or something like that, buying miles is never a good deal. Never. So unless you need a small quantity for a big deal, don't even think about it. And finally, here's a really cool thing. This is about wheelchairs. Remember we talked about miracle flyers hopping off of airplanes, getting on in a mm-hmm. wheelchair and hopping off. Adding my very personal 2 cents about travelers who appear to be fine but use airport wheelchairs. Unless you're a spine surgeon or a highly trained therapist, you probably can't tell that my spine is a disaster. And the fact I can walk 200 feet with a lightweight purse might deceive you. Truth be, I can't carry, wheel, push, or pull much of anything. I can quickly and adeptly stand up, sit down, turn around, and I'm quite agile without any facial grimacing. I'm made up and well-coughed and look quite able-bodied. Long courses and long lines cause pain and readiness. Thank you for everyone for not judging this book or a similar one by its cover, and not judging when you see my older husband carrying my purse or handling all of our luggage. So not everybody who jumps up and walks off the plane has been cured, and that lady just asking for a little lack of judgment and a little forgiveness. So mea culpa on our part, and touche to her. Next week, we're going to take calls from folks. We want to know your best travel story with your mom. Wherever you went with mom, that really was memorable. Tom, you must have a story of your own.
No, boy, you bet.
Yeah. So next week, we'll have some prizes.
Right, right. And also a special guest from Talc Tours, been around twice as long as Mark's business.
Yeah,
and we're going to be talking to the folks with Talc. They're legends. That's next week on The Travel Guys. You dance, stay well, my friends.
Dance like nobody's watching. We'll see you next Sunday at 3.
He never has the time to turn around.